Good afternoon and welcome to the April 27th edition of the Joint Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery. At the request of one of our members, we're going to reschedule our agenda. And I will turn the at least recognize Representative Thompson to reorganize our schedule this afternoon. Representative Thompson, do you have a bill that you'd like to have heard?
Actually, I have a whole lot of bills.
Well, you're going to get one. Just take your best shot.
I'd like to get, we're getting testimony here. Passed out.
We're referring to House Bill
3612.
3612. We are in a public hearing on 3612.
What happened and why this is here?
For the record, Representative Thompson.
And I very much appreciate the chair's hearing this bill because I had planned on amending this to a bill.
Representative Thompson, for the record.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Sherry Thompson, House District 4, on the Central Oregon Coast.
Have a Representative Thompson. Thank you.
This bill was one that I had planned on putting the amendments to, and it's been sent to Ways and Means and became apparent in the last moments of before House bills could be heard that the bill probably wouldn't go forward. So what I did was draw it back and use my last priority bill, and thanks to the leadership of this committee, they were able to gabble tap it through, so we were able to hear it. What it does is does two things. It corrects some problems that had been worked out with the fishing industry and the state police that I'll let Lindsey Ball address. It also brings the Albacore Commodity Commission into existence. And Albacore, if you're not aware, I'll give you a quick rundown before I let Herb talk about it, is the fishery that last year, because of what happened in Asia, the economy there, when it collapsed, the Asian boats went into the American markets and flooded the markets with tuna while the American fleet was at sea. You're at sea sometimes as much as 3 and 4 months before you come back to land. Well, by the time they got back to this coast, where they usually ship their fish to those markets in the South Pacific, all the freezers were full of fish, so there was no place for them to sell. Consequently, they literally were in a situation where the guys didn't have anything to do with their fish. They tried to sell what they could off the boats, and there was no market in the world. So this is a little bit of a fix. What an albacore or the commodity commission can do can stimulate growth in an industry. And it's a good thing. There's no cost to the state. The cost is put on the fishermen themselves. And it's simply a step in trying to regain a hold on the market that the American fishery had developed. And incidentally, I will go one step farther. Albacore a few years ago was a fishery that was in a tremendous decline. And because of the work that Herb and several fishermen did to remove the high sea drift nets from the North Pacific, that fishery is in a tremendous increase. And more fish coming into this coast all the time, so we need to put the Albacore Commodity Commission into existence because we've done such a good job with our fisheries. So I'll let Herb, you can go ahead and give a quick presentation about why we need this, and then we'll...
And Herb, all I'd like to ask you to do is state your full name for the record. Have at her.
My name is Herb Goblersch, Herbert M. Goblersch from Otter Rock, Oregon, in Lincoln County.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson didn't mention himself as one of the spearheads in the effort in the battle against high seas Asian drift nets a few years ago, but anyway, that's probably the primary reason now that we have albacore to worry about as a resource. It's one of the healthiest fisheries on the Pacific coast with one of the least developed markets presently, and that's why we're here today to hopefully pass this bill to have an Oregon Albacore Commodity Commission. One thing I'd like to say is that these albacore are ranged across from Japan all the way across to our eastern shores every year on their migration. And we go far and wide to catch them. I have 50-foot boats and commonly go every year. I make at least two trips to 12 to 1,300 miles offshore. It may be off California or Washington or British Columbia, but I always come back to Oregon to land my fish. So these albacore, if they're caught by a Canadian or a Californian or an Oregonian, as long as they're landed in Oregon, become Oregon product. And so we have the opportunity here to gather some funds by establishing an albacore commodity commission to help us with marketing. And even though it may be an Oregonian or a British Columbian who lands fish in Oregon and the tax is assessed, we're all being benefited by this in creating and developing new markets. I'd like to read you a page from...
Okay.
Page from the Review of Oregon Commercial Fishing Industry, 1998, and Outlook for 99 by Rodsky and Davis. And this basically sums up the reason why we need this. Discussion for 1998, albacore tuna. Tuna landings increased to 10.5 million pounds. This is a record since 1978. Partly because of Asian economic meltdown, demand for fish dropped. Because of liquidity squeeze, several large international fish buyers sold their frozen tuna inventory at any price. This devastated the albacore market and available prices for Oregon albacore fisheries. Price for albacore decreased between 1997 and 98 from 71 cents a pound to 57 cents a pound in 1998. Many fishermen were unable to sell their fish at prices that would cover their expenses. The landed value for tuna was $6 million. The total economic impact for the state was about $16 million. Outlook for 1999. The warming of the ocean, which has been part of the salmon problem, may be a positive factor for tuna harvest. Unless better markets are developed for frozen and fresh products, the Oregon-based albacore tuna trawler will be competing with larger West Pacific producers. The canners seem to prefer the larger tuna harvested from these waters. There are discussions going on for international treaties on highly migratory species. This includes albacore tuna. This is part of the multilateral high-level conference on management and conservation of highly migratory fish stocks to be held in Honolulu in February. Key issues to be addressed are convention area allocation of stocks, conditions for fishing enforcement. It is important that Oregon tuna fishermen be kept aware of these proceedings. The convention area may not cover Oregon waters. However, when initial allocations by countries are decided, the amount of accessible tuna may not be decided by geography. And basically, we need an albacore commodity commission to look after the interests of Oregon albacore fishermen.
Let me touch one thing. You say, why are we in front of the Salmon Commodity Commission? One of the reasons is because the salmon fleet is the traditional albacore fleet. If that fishery collapses, that puts more pressure on salmon. And what we're trying to do is take pressure off of salmon, so this is the committee that is the appropriate place. And I will go into the other part of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm captain of the Fish and Wildlife Division for the Oregon State Police. The portion of the bill that, House Bill 3612 that concerns me is to increase the value of fishery overages that we have seen in the commercial fishing fleet. For the most part, Class A misdemeanors, which are the current penalties that can be induced on commercial fish violations, work. But the cap on a penalty for the Class A misdemeanor only goes to $5,000. And we find some of the overages in the commercial fishing fleet exceeding $5,000. So consequently, if the penalty is only $5,000 and the person is pocketing $15,000, $5,000 is spent for the fine and $10,000 remains in his pocket. So we look at ways to take the incentive away from violating the law. And at first, we went to Senator Tarnow, and he supported a bill, sponsored a bill for us that would create a felony status for commercial fish violations. When discussing that option with the fleet came back, the fishing industry, came to us and said, well, we don't want to go with a felony status, but we would like to try to see if a civil penalty for double the value of the fish would create the compliance necessary so we can stay away from the felony status. In discussing that with the industry, I certainly agreed with it. We came up with an option that once it's over $5,000 in value, the civil penalty will kick in to double the civil fine at twice that value. And that way we eliminate charging people with felonies to exceed the overage limits in the commercial fishing industry. We discussed this matter with Paul Hanneman, who represents the fish processors, and Bill Easley of the Oregon Trawl Commission and Department of Fish and Wildlife, and they support this bill.
There is one thing I would like to do, and it's possible. It's a very simple change. It was pointed out to me by the processors. They would like a conceptual amendment to change on page 2 the last line to include the word processors, either to be, if it says, the director shall consider recommendations made to the director by producers of albacore, or it says, or producers' organizations, and it could be however you'd like to word it, and processors' organizations.
Just my word here. You referred to a page 2, and we're looking at 3612, which is a one-page bill.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, I have a different. I have the LC draft, that's why.
Excuse me. Right here. This
is yeah. And I could pass this. Just add the word processors, organization or processors.
First.
On the very last, the very bottom.
Line 24.
Line 24 on this page.
4.
Sorry about that.
Albacore producers, organizations, period.
Right. Just change it so processors are included.
So
producers and processors?
Yeah. Or producers and processors. It was just an error.
That would be added on at the end of line 23.
Right. Line 24 at the end. It's the proper syntax, doesn't it?
First and gentlemen, do you have a question? Just for clarification, are we talking about processors' organizations?
It could be processors or...
Yeah, this is written as producers' organizations. So the processors' organizations too, or is it the other?
I have the word processors' organization or processors would be what they'd like to have added. Processors' organizations is fine.
Questions, Representative King?
See if we in section 2, paragraph 2, beginning in line 7, says if a person derives a gain, and then the civil penalty would be equal to twice the amount of the gain, and if a person, let's say they have 10,000 pounds of fish and it's worth $30,000, but they don't actually get sold, then they haven't affected a gain. So, you know, should we be dealing with value there as versus, you know, what they gain?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, that falls back on the fair market value of the fish that's set by the state of Oregon, which is an average of the fish sold throughout the previous year. So it falls back on the fair market price.
And so the word gain already has a legal definition that you can work with legally to affect what I'm...
Okay, thank you. A question from Senator Nelson.
Just, I guess, some background questions on the fleet and some long nets and things like that. You say that's now been outlawed. How long has that been outlawed? Is there evasion, and how do you enforce those, the fleet law or laws that apply to that? Is that an international issue? I'm just
talking about high seas evasion.
Yeah,
that was the UN resolution, and effected in 1992, it's a UN worldwide ban on high seas, large scale, small mesh fishnets. So they're not coming back unless, quite frankly, in the last few years, we have seen a few pirate drift net boats from mainland China, brand new 200 plus footers. So we don't know what's going to happen if China wants to get serious. We all know our federal policy with China these days. So it is a bit of a worry, but presently there's no danger.
Okay. Representative Thompson, you're excused to rejoin your chair. I'd like to call Kay Brown up, and if you have additional comments.
I'd like to make one comment about that. There is a little bit of a worry. There's occasionally a pirate boat out there, and you can imagine how hard it is to find one of those boats if you think that 100-footer was sitting in Kansas and you had to leave here to try to find it. It's difficult. And we're trying to work out the agreements all the time so that that can't happen, and we've done a good job so far.
Ms. Brown?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kay Brown. I represent the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. My formal testimony is being handed out to you, but in a nutshell, I'd just like to say that we support both concepts in the bill, the idea of a increased penalty in terms of the civil penalty and also the Albacore Commission. I've attached to my comments some information relative to the albacore fishery, the catch in recent years, as well as the value for the community's information, just in case there were any questions that came up about that. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Brown? Hearing none, are there any more persons here present that wish to testify on the issue of House Bill 3612? If not, the committee is in work session on House Bill 3612. Representative Thompson? Oh, question, Representative
Lindsay. I'm just hearing when I was out, and this might have said earlier, but I was wondering for the sponsor of the bill, if he could guarantee that, I think we have one more commission, that the industry would always hold themselves together and not come to the legislature for a divided issue like the sheep coalition does. He can guarantee that or not.
We would try.
Colleagues, you have a fiscal report from Legislative Fiscal that has been distributed that says this will entirely overturn any plans for financing K through 12. Minimal fiscal impact is exactly what's been distributed on House Bill 3612. Representative Thompson, did you have a motion?
Yes, I would like to pass House Bill 3612 as, or if you have to, conceptual amendment. How do you want?
Okay, the first order of business is to approve the conceptual amendment that would add and or processors or organizations or processors on line 24. And that's intended conceptually to include, in the same way that producers of albacore or producers organizations, we would have processors organizations or processors that would also be included in the memberships of the Commodities Commission. Does everybody understand the conceptual amendment? Close enough? So we have a motion to accept the conceptual amendment. Are there objections? Seeing none, the conceptual amendments are adopted. Representative Thompson.
I'd like to move House Bill 3612 as conceptual amended to the floor of the new House recommendation.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 3612 as conceptually amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. Representative Thompson will carry in the House.
Senator Nelson will carry in the...
Well, actually, Senator Turner, would you like to carry in that in the Senate? Okay.
So we have a House and Senate carrier, and that concludes our work session on House Bill 3612. Captain Ball, Mr. Goldblush, and Kay Brown, you may have your cake. And let's move on to the next item of business. You move a bill, you get a piece of cake. Pretty good. Trick.
One in the Senate program.
Senate Bill 133 is the next item of business, so we'll call, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 133. I told you have a pile of documentation for Senate Bill 133 before you. Steve, do you have a sign-up sheet for Senate Bill 133? And Judith, would you brief the committee on Senate Bill 133?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 133 deals specifically with the responsibilities of this joint committee and any subsequently appointed committee that would is charged with oversight of the Oregon plan. You'll find at your seat a matrix where I have put side by side the name, the membership, and the scope of responsibilities under current law as it was originally passed when this committee was first established last session. And then you'll see right next to that the Dash-3 amendments. You do have a hand engrossed version of the Dash-3 amendments for Senate Bill 133 at your seat. I will walk through the changes that the Dash-3 amendments make to current law. First of all, it does do a name reference change instead of naming a specific committee because our name was different during the interim than it is now. It simply references that the Joint Legislative Committee created pursuant to ORS 171551, which is the statute that creates this oversight responsibility for the Oregon Plan. The membership is, instead of being, we were 7 members during the interim, 3 from the House, 3 from the Senate, and then we had an additional senator that was selected by the appointed members. In the Dash-3 amendments that would change current law by leaving unspecified the number of members that would sit on this body, again, with the co-chairs designated by the Speaker and the President. The scope of responsibilities is where the main changes are to the measure. In the original Oregon plan and establishing this committee, the members were given oversight responsibilities for stream and salmon enhancement efforts generally, and implementation of the Oregon Coastal Salmon Restoration Initiative, which is indeed the Oregon plan. For salmon and watersheds, as it's now known, and generally for programs that improve the health of Oregon's streams. You'll see on the right-hand column that responsibility would be expanded to include all programs related to native and anadromous fish enhancement, protection, and restoration of wildlife habitat. In addition, it would generally provide for oversight and coordination of all activities related not only to the Oregon Plan but to other major natural resource initiatives and any other duties that the President and Speaker might assign. It also includes that the committee will receive reports from the Department of Environmental Quality on water use sustainability analysis. Further make statutory reference changes to the Oregon Plan referencing the ORS section, It does specifically state that nothing in this act shall be construed to terminate or suspend the duties, rights, or responsibilities of the Joint Committee, and it does declare an emergency effective on taxes. There's no fiscal and revenue impact statements on the Commission.
Senator Duke.
Mr. Chair, I was curious. There's no mention under scope of responsibilities or additional responsibilities about hatcheries or hatchery fish. Are they encompassed in the term anadromous fish?
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, I would imagine that when it references all programs related to native or anadromous fish, I would expect that that would include also hatchery-type programs and any issues related to those.
We couldn't get it under the native fish, but if we're not worried about the hatchery trout, then they don't commute, do they?
I work 15.
I came in dash two amendments, revised wording there. It might be relative to the question also, where it now says on page one, section one, line nine, Joint Legislative Committee for the consideration of issues related to the Oregon Plan, as described in ORS 541.405, and other issues related to stream restoration and species recovery generally.
Yeah.
I would think that that would include that.
Question, thank you, Representative King. Judy, did you have an issue?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative King. I received those documents from Representative Thompson. I don't know if Steve actually had passed those out to the members, so I don't know if they have, in fact, have those. Okay. I want to make sure everyone had that and knew what you were talking about. That would be a dash two amendment that would not be, that's not in the Hanegraaff version. That would be separate language. And in looking at the dash twos in comparison to the other amendments, that language specifically on the front page is all I can see as the difference between the dash twos and the dash twos.
And the dash twos were brought by Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Thompson, did you want to give us the... just the basic differences.
I'm afraid that
if there's any significant difference, I think you need to hear that.
Chair, this bill has been hanging around for how long? I brought those amendments forward, and I forced someone. Excuse me, but I don't remember who it was. This embarrassing to me. I was hoping this wouldn't happen.
Representative Thompson, they were brought to the committee in good faith. There's just a no-fault kind of situation. Don't worry about it. The hand-endorsed versions on the dash three, it contains slightly different language from the dash two amendments, but I like the general. I like the lines 9 through 13 on the dash 2, perhaps even better than the hand and gross version. But, okay, let's probably just look carefully at the rest of the information in the hand and gross version.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see referenced native fish and anadromous. They're also on the page 1A, the bottom of the page. To me, that could be construed to mean native fish enhancement, protection, and restoration of wildlife habitat. If we're talking, if that could be expanded to mean native habitat, I think we've got a big problem. 1A of the dash threes, hand and gross.
1-14-3.
Bottom of the page.
That's the Senate Bill 133, and in the upper right hand corner it will say with the dash three amendments, hand and gross.
It's page 1.
And it's page 1.
Page 20.
What would be page
2? 1A.
920.
And I think it's also line 14. I think this speaks to Senator Duke's concern as well, that are we talking about other fisheries as well, or just the Navy fisheries in this? I guess I'm wondering why we have to have native in the trees.
Question when you're ready.
Excuse me?
Question when you're ready.
Let's just acknowledge Representative Meckler's concern over those, over the phrase native or anadromous fish enhancements. And yes, sir, we're continuing right for your question.
Mr. Chair, if I could continue with
the rest of the mission, we will continue.
I'm finding it also on page 2, line 9. And might be more.
Judith may have a clarification for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I did just consult with our birthday girl, and she indicated that the dash 2s provide a narrower scope for the committee. So it does. There are some things in the dash 3s that are not in the dash 2s because the dash 2s do maintain that narrower scope just related to the Oregon plan and stream restoration and species recovery, where the dash 3s broaden out to more natural resource issues.
That's Representative King and then Representative Jensen.
Hey, my question has to do with how broad we are. In the Dash 1 amendments, the original wording was natural resources early on, and that seemed to cover trees and a whole bunch of things that weren't very relevant. But, for example, in our last meeting, we dealt with non-native species, which are clearly not, native, but they're clearly related to policies that are, what we're dealing with, trying to, save the salmon. And so I'm wondering if we, in our language, we're talking about what we're doing with fish and wildlife issues, if we do want to be broad enough to cover things that are not just native salmon recovery, because it seems like, the more we deal with things, the more things are related, and as long as it's in the water or part of the wildlife habitat, that's a correlated issue, but I don't think we want to be every natural resource.
Question, Judith, or comment?
Simple clarification, Mr. Chair, members. It's my understanding from Jeanette that the dash ones actually are corrected. There were some housekeeping and technical corrections that Jeanette simply made in the dash threes. So, in a sense, I would recommend focusing on the dash twos and dash threes because she has made some corrections to the dash ones. That's the only thing that happened between the ones and the threes.
Well, back to Representative King's comments. Representative King, the Measure 66 talks about fish and wildlife habitat, which poses back to the land base, which, irrespective of the issue of fish or water quality, which got us started, and with the broadening scope of Measure 66 and the interface of this committee with wildlife and fisheries habitat and watershed management, I think you're probably right. The scope of the committee is growing by induction. I agree with you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lundquist, while Representative Jensen is confirmed.
Go ahead.
Representative Lundquist.
Well, not having been part of this committee before, I guess my question is, what are you attempting to do here? Are you trying to stake out the territory, so to speak, of what this committee wants to work on? Or are you trying to gather as much as you can in? or are you trying to narrow it? Because in reality, from a very practical standpoint, it seems to me like that the leadership will determine basically what's going to get assigned to this committee. And it's somewhat of a, maybe it's a tongue-in-cheek, but it's almost a moot point, because they will give you what they want, or they will not give you what you want. And if that's a true assumption, I would favor keeping it reasonably broad, to just sort of allow that to happen, and then let the leadership is going to determine in the end what happens anyhow. So, and I'm not just sure that, you know, the genesis of this, so I might be speaking a little bit out of turn, but that's how it strikes me. I have a little trouble deciding, you know, if it's really that critical that we try to narrow it or put it to an area and say, yeah, that's not for us and that's not for us. That's, frankly, Chairman, that's sort of how it struck me, I guess.
Well, Representative, I think your analysis is correct. The purpose of Senate Bill 133 is to broaden the scope of responsibility for the committee to include the oversight pertaining to Native and Enablement fish. The broadening language in the dash free hand and growth amendments comes from the concept that Senator 66 talked about watershed and wildlife habitat. I think in the earlier discussions of Senate Bill 133, the committee talked about wanting to be at least a touchstone committee that would interface with the watershed issues, the wildlife habitat issues, the Measure 66 issues, the Endangered Species Act and Clean Water Act issues that we've been hearing, and at least be a place where the issues that might also go to land and water or natural resources on either side of this building, either the House or the Senate, would have an interface with that broader set of concerns. So I agree. I think the broader scope tends at least to give the leadership an opportunity to bring the issues at least to bear in a committee that has heard an awful lot about the Endangered Species Act, interface with the Fish and Wildlife Service, National Marine Fisheries Service, and all the other federal regulators that we seem to be meeting more and more. Representative Jensen, you had a question, and then Senator Duke.
Yes, in relationship to the Dash 2s and Dash 3, and Representative Messervate's observation, it seems to me that the Dash 2s address that issue about the Native, and as a consequence, you know, I like that aspect of it at least a little better. The question I would have, I think, to the chair, does the Dash 2 provide the increased flexibility, broaden the scope in the manner that experience that you've had indicates it should be?
Did you have an observation on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would say that, I mean, this bill originally came from the interim committee. Certainly, the interim committee was looking for the opportunity to look at a broader scope of issues. So I would say that it's certainly up to this body to determine whether or not you want to keep it narrow to stream and species recovery, or if indeed you want to broaden it further as it extends into other natural resource scope. But I will point out, as Representative Lundquist had mentioned, it says right in the Dash 3 that you'll find that the additional duties would be coordination, oversight, and advisory duties related to the management of natural resources in Oregon as assigned by the President and the Speaker. So it says on the face of the amendment that we would be basically working at the charge of leadership.
Okay, let me come back to the issue then. Dash 3s are broadened, quite a bit broader. They encompass the issues that were brought forward from the interim committee. The Dash 2 amendment that was presented by Representative Thompson has a bit different language in Section 1. So let's go ahead and key in on the language in Section 1 and make a decision about that language.
Never mind. Oh, that forever, it's worth, I like the Dash 2 and other issues excuse me, related to stream restoration of species recovery in general.
We're not in work session yet, but let's get a consensus on the language in the dash twos versus the dash threes. Representative Starr, did you have an observation or question?
Well, I just have an observation, and I keyed off of it from an email that Jim Ryan sent all of us, I believe, that the word amending language in OLS and either were also addressing in Health Code 3225, and the question that I would have is whether we're at least that we should be cognizant of that, and when we address those other bills that we realize that we may pass this one out and it affects what we do in 3225 as well.
So noted. Thank you. Other questions or observations? In section one on the dash twos, we have a different set of statements about the issues to be considered by the Joint Legislative Committee. The dash twos talk about the Oregon Plan, the ORSs, creating the Oregon Plan, the issues related to stream restoration and species recovery generally. And in the dash three hand and gross amendments, we have the Joint Legislative Committee for the will be for the coordination and oversight of natural resource issues. So natural resource issues is a fairly broad universe. The dash two amendments talk more specifically about stream restoration and species recovery. Iris Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I believe
that we voted
a natural resources overall. Think that we have enough on our plate if we just try to handle the salmon plan, let alone go into all the other issues. I'm not saying that at some point we don't need to expand, but I think that for right now, we'll be busy enough for the next 2 or 3 years before trying to take on the other issues that are resolved around natural resources.
If you think about a relating clause, Representative Thompson, if we were talking about stream restoration and species recovery in a relating clause, you would have a universe that you could bound.
Yeah.
If you have a relating clause that talks about natural resource issues in general, I think you have a universe that is unbounded, and I think that's your point. Any other discussion, Representative
Thompson? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for being late. Human resources ran over. I guess my problem with the dash two is where the threes may appear to be a little too broad, the twos don't necessarily bring in the Clean Water Act because it's talking about a stream restoration, which does include, but perceptively doesn't. I don't see by going to coordination and oversight of natural resource agencies where this committee necessarily is going to intrude into the work of the Ag and Natural Resource Committee or Water and Environment or whatever other committees are dealing in specific areas. But that we have already seen in this committee that we have borrowed bills from other committees just so we can be aware of scope of the work they're doing too. So, you know, there's a connectedness in this system and there needs to be an awareness by this committee of what other committees dealing in natural resources are doing, and I think the broader language allows for that.
Any further discussion, Senator Duke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to apologize for wandering into Section 2, but I think it relates to what we're talking about. I had difficulty this session getting used to people referring to fish as animals. But did they become wildlife sometime when I wasn't looking? Because on page 1A, line 13, it says, the committee will review the activities of the individuals and state and federal agencies implementing the Oregon Coastal Salmon Restoration System and other programs related to native and anadromous fish enhancement, protection, and restoration of wildlife habitat. So it seems to me that by going to natural resources, we have truly opened this up, and I expect us to be discussing rangeland in eastern Oregon pretty soon, the stuff that isn't on the banks of Indian Creek. And I share Representative Thompson's concerns that we met every month last interim. And we still have difficulty getting done what we needed to get done. I'd be happy to go where Representative Cruz is talking about and get in the clean water stuff, but I just assume not get into the wildlife unless somebody wants to tell me they've redefined them, and you're going to do that, aren't you?
Actually, Senator Duke, the term wildlife habitat comes from Measure 66, and that is the charge of the Senate. So I'm sorry to say, fish are not wildlife. Perhaps the person from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife would like to come in here and tell us what our wildlife.
For the record, I'm Kay Brown with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. If you look in the wildlife statute, it does define wildlife as including fish.
So there.
Okay. Sure, I would say, you know, fish are definitely wildlife as opposed to tame life. So,
have a piece of cake, Jack. Representative Thompson, can you reassert some order here? No. Actually, to bring us back to focus on this issue, I hope we can do that, what we're looking at is the definition of the scope of work that's contained in the first section of the bill. In my opinion, the Sand and Gross version of -3 talks about natural resources, which is an unbounded universe. The -2 amendments have a much clearer and more bounded universe, but I still believe that because of Measure 66, our committee arguably could take over the oversight of anything that's assigned to us from the legislative leadership. Representative Thompson.
And I agree with you. I agree that we could go just about anywhere. I just did. With the bill related to salmon. This committee has the ability to go there, but I'd like to have some basic parameters or guidelines that we can pull back to. I think we can just about do anything except for maybe run Oregon steel mills. And we might find an excuse we can do that out of this committee. So when we get to it, I would like to move the -2s when we get and vote on it and get the vote back.
Is there a consensus about the Section 1 bold language in the -2 committee? Everybody okay? Everybody feel comfortable with that? Okay, can we take up the issue then of Co-Chair Mitchell's concern about native and anadromous, which is issues that appear in the Hand and Gross version. The concern again is that with an emphasis on native and anadromous fish rather than just saying fish, we can gotten into the wild fish debate. Is that correct there?
Mr. Chair? Also, Mr. Chair, could be read to relate to native habitat as well.
Senator Child?
Page 2 of the -2 amendments, line 29.
Page 2, -2, line 19 and 20. Excuse me, line 20, sir?
29. Sir, Jeanette has deleted the language native and anadromous fish. That's part of the -2 amendment.
Not the -3.
No.
Members, we're on the -2 amendment that stands alone. Page 2, Senator Towns referencing lines 29 and I suppose 30 as well, where it says delete native and anadromous fish and insert fish and wildlife species.
Representative Jensen.
That same language is carried throughout. I think it, on page 3, we find the same thing on line 8, on line 3, et cetera. It seems to be consistent throughout the -2. Gone through and done that. I think that was the intent in the -2.
Okay. Colleagues, does that solve everybody's concern over native and anadromous?
I'm not able to concatenate
Excuse me, Representative, I'm sorry.
I'm not able to concatenate the amendments of...
Concatenate is a term
that you're
not
three.
Familiar with.
That's combining two files into one file.
So. I see. Have a piece of cake, Representative. I'm certain the legal counsel is somewhere in the building listening intently to this discussion, and perhaps it would be time to invite her to have another go at the committee.
I think my concern is we're taking care of in dash two, but I think we're having a super attack here tonight.
Representative Tarnow is about to concatenate here on the committee. Representative Senator Tarnow, excuse me. Senator Tarnow, did you have one?
Yes, Chair. Yes,
any others? Questions? It's the Chair's intention to have Jeanette compare and contrast our dash twos and dash threes so we know we're not creating something that was not intended. We are not the victim of a drive-by amendment, so we have called Legislative Council, and I anticipate she's on her way.
Thank you, Chair. It doesn't matter how an amendment gets here, so long as we do good amendments for the people of the state of Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Representative Thompson, I know that you're sticking your legislative reputation on the fact that this is a good amendment. I know that you are.
Mr. Chair, I apologize to you because when I saw the dash threes, I theorized when there were dash twos out there and decided to hunt those down this afternoon, and now it's causing the confusion in the committee today. I would have hand engrossed the dash twos if I had had those previously, so I do apologize for the confusion.
I'm wondering, if you look at the original Senate Bill 133, Section 1, it outlines our responsibilities to oversee the science team, as well as the coastal salmon and other things. Are we deleting that? I don't know that we want to delete those.
Isn't that described in 541-405?
Described in 541-405, Senator Tarnow indicates that his opinion is that the oversight is, oversight language is in ORS 541-405, which is in the reference on page 1, line 11.
Members, I believe that reference is to the Oregon plan that does not address the responsibilities of this committee, which are indeed in ORS 171.551 and 553. The reference to 541-405 is the reference to the Oregon plan.
Okay.
Representative Thompson.
Do you realize how much joy this is as a Democrat to watch everybody do this after all the time you handed amendments with five minutes before?
Well, strictly speaking, Representative, we had already agreed that any amendments that haven't been distributed to the committee before the hearing would not be heard.
Sorry, I fought over that one.
I don't think that would be agreement, unless brought by a member to one of the chairmen. So it could be distributed to the group. So we've not seen these before. And I share your delight. Representative
Chair, in relationship to the concern about the independent science team, is are those concerns met in Section 7, in the entirety of Section 7 in the day 2? There is a regular reporting regularly to the Joint Legislative Committee pursuant to ORS.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that does refer to the IMST's responsibilities. It does not reflect then the oversight of this committee with respect to that team.
Chair,
first thing that's on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just pointed out to me by Representative Kane that Dash 2 changes the reference from 171.553 to Section 1 on the Dash 2 says 171.551. So they are.
That's true, and that reference is not bold as I can tell. It's a way of trying to do that very spot on.
Coleman, you enjoyed your and digested your cake because you're going to burn all that sugar up right now. The issue before us is the comparison between the Dash 3 Hammond Grossman version of 133 and the Dash 2 amendment. I would be willing to guess, no stake my life on it, that you drafted both these sets of amendments.
Mr. Chair, I did indeed. Jeanette Holman from Legislative Council. And more important, I have my cheat sheet from when I drafted, which is probably what we all need tonight. So I can tell you approximately, are you looking at this? Okay. I think to tell you exactly where the changes are, it'd be easiest if you look at, yeah, the dash ones are just the three.
We have the Senate Bill 133, we have a dash three hand and gross version of Senate Bill 133, we have the dash two amendments.
And we have the dash three.
And we have dash one amendments.
You do have dash one?
Dash one.
Dash three are a corrected version of dash one.
Okay.
When I was making the dash twos, I was working from the dash one, so for reference purposes, I think it would be easier to make sure the
So the dash two amendments, in fact, incorporate all of the original and the dash one amendments?
Well, the point is different on the dash twos. The dash twos really keep the committee much more tied to the Oregon plan activities. Okay. One of the changes is that.
Are you referencing which dash amendment?
If you look at the threes, do you have the threes?
We have the Henry Rose version of the dash three.
Just the Henry Rose version. We're playing with them now. In the Hammond-Gross version, in section one, where the bold language says Joint Legislative Committee for the Coordination and Oversight of Natural Resource Issues, a change in the twos is to make that consideration of issues related to the Oregon Plan, as described in 541-405, and other risks. Issues related to stream restoration and species recovery generally. So I think there you see very clearly the difference in that to see a project with no limits.
Okay, so the hand and gross gas 33 is a much broader application.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
there are some other changes in the dash 2s relating to, for instance, on page 2, line 29, the native and anadromous purchase of fish.
We talked about section 1.
Yes.
There's one more problem, I think. On section 1, on the dash 3, it states right after section 1, ORS 171.551. On our original bill, it states section 1, ORS 171.553. One of them says 551, the other one says 553. Is that a typographical error?
I don't know that I have the original bill with me.
Representative Starr has a question.
That's too long.
In the original bill, we did not change the name of the salmon pool. We left it the way it was. The original bill was drafted and pre-session filed before you had a new name. And so when you change the name, that's why in both the 1 and the 2 and the 3, you see a name change to a more generic name, which just allows you to deal with the issue rather than a particular name. Okay.
Representative King, did that deal with your issue of the renumbering?
I heard her say it, but I didn't really understand any significance. But if
what was the word you used earlier today?
Concatenate.
You need to concatenate for Representative King.
You need to what?
That had to do with later, but I think what we're dealing with right now is the numbering. And
yeah, just,
so you're saying that the numbering just accounts for the, you know, for the change in name? Is that what you're...
ORF 171-551 established the committee, and when we first drafted the bill during the interim, we weren't looking to reconstitute the committee particularly. All we knew at that point was that we wanted to change some of their duties. That's why in the dash 1 and 2 also do the same thing. We made it a more generic name so it can be called whatever it wants to be called. We took out a specific number of members of the committee. And again, that can change with the leadership, depending on how they want to set it up. But we left in the statute a specific that there is a committee to be established to deal with these particular matters.
You know the process, you know, better than I, but it seems like it appears that we're going to perhaps be amending pieces of different dashes into, you know, into one of these versions, and that we wouldn't, if we started off with original bill with 553, we might need to incorporate that particular moment as a part of our processing if we're not adopting the whole dash version.
Fortunately, Representative King, if we adopt the dash 2 amendments or any other amendments, they would have to be engrossed. Another version would have to be produced before it would move to the floor, and at that point in time, there's another opportunity to check those statute numbers. So we would have a process where those numbers would be checked.
Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just did a very perfunctory perusal of 171.553, and I'm wondering if the dash 2 really changed anything that's already there. As far as the duties of the committee. Now, admittedly, in 171.551, we've already gone beyond that as far as membership of the committee.
Right.
But if the dash 2 is basically tied to the Oregon plan, that's already in statute. So So that basically makes that unnecessary. And maybe all we need to be doing is addressing the membership of the committee. I mean, if that's the direction we're going.
So I think that the dash two still talk about species recovery generally, which is broader than the original statute. Even though it is not as broad as the dash three amendments, which is all natural resource issues. I think there is a step, an intermediary step that the dash two represents. But colleagues, let's not bog down on this. The dash two, see, we've already had a consensus, kind of a nod on the dash two amendments of the description of what we're about. Let's move through this and look at the other changes that Jeanette would call considerable or direction changes in the dash two. Jeanette, we talked about line, or page 2, line 29, the deletion of native and anadromous, the insertion of fish and wildlife. What other significant changes proceed from that point?
There's a number of changes, Mr. Chair, that deal with the change from native and anadromous. I mean, that kind of refers throughout them. In section 5, which is on page 2 of your...
Section 5 is on page 3 of the dash 2.
Page 3 of the dash 2, but it's page 2 of your hand and growth bill.
Page 2 of the hand and growth version.
Sorry?
Roseanne, can you just look at the numbers on the bottom of the page?
The change I see no change there except that in the name. I'm thinking of working,
okay.
But I don't see any. I believe the rest of them are the same.
Okay, so all of the other changes just are name changes from that point out.
Okay.
And, Representative Jensen?
And that's page 2, starting on line 17.
Of what do you
think? Dash 2. That's all transition there. If I could, in the preceding number 6, subject from line 15, and then we go through a couple of delete and insert, and then we go through 1, and that's...
Okay. You've changed statute. You are now into what is on page 1A. Of your hand and growth version, you're amending 171553.
Do you have the reference again, Gina?
It's page 1A of the hand and growth version.
Yes. Line?
Line is the ones that correspond to the twos are in 60, 60, 50, 50.
Right, and that proceeds from section 2, so it would be
right.
Section 2, dash 1, 2, et cetera.
Right.
Right, so in line 5, delete 1 and insert 2. That would be section 2 of the dash 1 amendment.
Right.
And the memory appears to be correct, and I reference something.
Accepting that this was in the dash 3, which follow that for the dash 2. And the dash 2 has a
Do you have a copy of the dash two?
Yeah.
On page two, line 18.
Yeah.
The instruction is verbatim 5, delete 1, and insert 2. Mm-hmm. That refers to on this page, on line 5?
No. It refers to the first page of the bill.
In line 5, the first page of the bill.
Right.
Which, Mr. Chair, is also on page 1A of the handing guard. Right in the middle of the page.
The line 5 of page 1.
Line 5 and 6.
All right, I got it. Mr. Jensen, have you got the memo?
I finally caught up here. I didn't have anywhere a section 2, and I couldn't go to the handing gross 3 because I seemed to have followed the 2. And going back to the original bill, I see we're picking this up. We've added a section 1, an entire section 1, apparently.
Yes.
And this is now section 2.
Yes.
And I'm on track.
I see lights going on all over the panel here, so seems like we're on track.
There ain't nobody home here.
Trip 10 this way.
But then Lester,
it's true.
But then, making reference to the room, actually.
What answers did you have a comment to make?
Well, everybody else seems to understand. It says in line 5, delete 1 and insert 2, and that's reference to page 1, and line 5 on page 1 says emergency. It doesn't. So.
It refers to the original bill.
Okay.
It's an amendment to the original bill.
Okay.
Well, there is a girl coming home.
Well, me silly. I think I'm missing now.
Jeanette, did we ever establish the identity of the bringer of dash twos? But we, other than that, we have the bringers under the cover.
Mr. Chair, I have a suggested conceptual. I'm assuming that we're still working the dash two. And if we're doing that, suggest a conceptual amendment on line 11 on the first page, section 1, to read, so it would read, and of other issues related to water quality, stream restoration, and species recovery generally. And my fear is stream restoration. Certainly we know that we're referencing water quality. 5 years from now, I'm not sure that people would know that. And I it's my preference to specifically reference water quality wherever I think it's appropriate.
Colleagues, you've heard the conceptual question. Is that a problem for anybody?
I know that. I'm just looking for consent.
Could you state that again once?
Okay. Basically,
let the chair restate that. It would be on between line 10 and line 11, above line 11, simply insert water quality on the dash 2s, page 1 of the dash 2s, line 11, insert the words water quality after the words related to. So it would be water quality, stream restoration, and species recovery generally.
Water quality.
Yeah.
If you prefer. Anybody have any particular heart wrong with that?
Just a tweak. So with water quality, we mean we could take action on that, but not necessarily wouldn't have to. When you have water quality, refers to well water, all sorts of water quality. I don't know. What do you say? I don't know. The more we'll try to wordsmith this, the harder it gets.
If I could respond, Mr. Chair.
Exactly.
Thank you. Well, it says related to, so it isn't inclusive of all water quality issues, but clearly, compliance with the Clean Water Act is an integral part of the Oregon plan. And so I think it's imperative on us to reference water quality when we're dealing with scope, and this is a statement dealing with scope, and therefore I think it's appropriate to add it.
Representative Cruz, Representative Lindquist, I'll point to the relating clause in the bill, which talks specifically about pertaining to native and anadromous fish. The salmon and stream enhancement shall include oversight of activities pertaining to native and anadromous fish. That has implications for water quality. That is the way I would interpret water quality in this case, not well water or drinking water. Senator Turner?
Well, Mr. Chair, the only qualms I would have is to what degree do we get involved in the 303 list and TMDOs as a water quality issue? To me, that's the crux of the whole thing. And I have no problem getting involved in that. But I think it could be a very in-depth discussion.
Oh, I think we will be involved with those issues. That is one of the roles of the Oversight Committee. Representative Morgan?
See, I think that what we are going to end up fighting over here is water quality, and that it would behoove us to put it in at this end of the process, because I would be willing to bet $5 that that's where the discussion is ultimately going to end up.
No better she wins.
Nobody's going to take that bet. Representative Thompson?
As long as the relating cause is there, and since salmon recovery is related to water quality, I don't have a problem with it. But I wouldn't want to see it go to where we're spending all of our time relating to water quality where the salmon aren't involved.
Yeah. That's it. Other questions? Colleagues, I see everybody's sick of this discussion. Let's go into work session on this and get this bill moved. I think we've come to consensus on all the major issues. We are in work session. Chair will entertain a motion on the conceptual amendment adding the words water quality to the dash 2. Any objections? That would appear on line 11 after the word 2. Hearing no objections, so ordered. The dash 2 amendment as presented. Representative Thompson, since you're the mystery bringer of dash 2.
Would you like me to move the dash 2 amendment?
Representative Thompson has moved the dash 2 amendment. Are there objections, questions, or comments for this as amended, as conceptually amended? Seeing no objections, the dash 2 as conceptually amended are moved. We have now Senate Bill 133 as amended by the conceptual amendments to dash 2. Is there a motion? Representative Thompson.
I'll move Senate Bill 133 as amended by the dash 2 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. If the found person will carry the bill.
I'm sorry, we cannot accept a conditional motion. Remove the condition from your motion.
I'll remove the condition.
The clerk will call the roll. Oh, excuse me. I beg your pardon. Before we call the roll, Steve, is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any further discussion on this motion?
Well, I'm getting confused. I recognize the committee. Excuse me. I'm still kind of new, and I was just wondering, this is just two, and we kept jumping into three at times, but we didn't have any pieces of the threes into the twos, right? Okay, I just wanted to be clear on that. Thank you. Yes, we didn't.
Further discussion? Steve, would you please take the roll?
Representative
Cantor.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. What?
Aye. Motion passes. We'll need a carrier. Representative Thompson, you are carrying this thing on the House floor. I'd have to go to the Senate first, so... Senator Shields, would you carry this?
All right.
I ask you to carry this bill.
Senator Duke will carry on the floor.
We're out of one session on Senate Bill 133, and the chair is leaving the room.
Mr. Chair?
Pick your chair. You can imagine the floor speeches that are going to come about this one, the Phantom Amendment.
It's in the public record and on the internet now.
On the other hand, Representative Thompson, I'm not going to tell anyone if you don't, so forget that. Open the hearing on Senate Bill 1161.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 1161. Is a bill that we've seen before. It ratifies the Columbia River Natural Resources Management Compact. It is essentially a legislative compact looking to establish a legislative forum by which legislators of various states that surround the Columbia River have a chance to input in decision-making on the river. We have a -1 amendment that, if you look on the front page of the bill, line 20, it talks about the membership, who would be appointed to that forum. And based on the discussion that we had in committee the last time, you'll see the -1 amendment leaves the representation stated in the original bill, and instead indicates that 6 legislators would be appointed to this decision-making body, 3 from the state Senate, 3 from the state House of Representatives. We specifically left off any minority-majority language or bipartisan language, recognizing that there are, in fact, independent members in the chambers and did not want to restrict that, so we would then leave that up to the various states as to appointments, so the President and the Speaker would be selecting individuals to sit on this legislative forum.
Mr. Chair, could we at least insert some language that said not all members should be of the same party? And we have at least one task force in this that on the Senate side only has Republicans on it. We have at least one task force, unless they changed it this session, that only has Republicans on it.
If I'm not mistaken, I guess we lost Jeanette already, but I thought it was in the rules already that we had that balanced.
Well, maybe you're isn't. Well, I'm not talking about an outside task force as this would be. Members are appointed like a committee kind of thing.
Well, Madam, Mr. Speaker. Senator Drew, I was listening to your comment earlier. I'm actually on the task force.
You're not in the Senate anymore.
I'm sorry, I missed it. I think you said no Democrats are on.
No, there is a task force, unless they've changed the membership. I know for the last 2 years there have been no Democrats appointed, and I assume that I haven't heard the change, so I think you're still that way. Not that anybody's running around yelling about it a lot, but, I mean, it does point out that we do have precedent, if not given guidance, to make it all one party.
Actually, I don't know how formal it's set up, but you're right, Representative Leonard, and we attended the last meeting. I believe you're on that group too, but we're not able to attend the last meeting in Spokane, is that right?
Yeah, that's the one of the.
Well, I guess my point is that we're not going to change this forestry task force here. We're speaking only of this Columbia River governance. So
and all I'm asking is that we put in some language that say not all members would be from the same party in any one.
Okay.
I would certainly agree with that. I was one of them that started this in the last interview when we started meeting with the three states. And at the time when we first went up there, I know that it was all Republicans from our state and another one. And I think you really decrease your effectiveness if you start putting partisan politics in regard to the Columbia River Alliance, or whatever it calls here, I forget, compact. And I don't know just how definitive you want to make that, but I agree with Senator Dukes, there needs to be something in there, you know, because if you don't, yes, it's true that President Leonard's on there now, but that has nothing to do with the fact that what this says.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Cruz.
Maybe what we need to do is reference and say that this will be by the appointments will be by the rules that we operate in. Otherwise, that would give you the flexibility to deal with independent members and stuff like that, wouldn't it? I mean, an interim committee has to be proportional. And so why can't we just say that this task force will be appointed under those rules so that proportionality is observed?
And I was just discussing with staff the reason we changed it to this new language. And I was thinking it was because we decided we already had the rules in our appointment. Representative Morgan, did you have a question?
It seems to me we had a discussion that there already was in the rules provision for this, but personally I don't have a problem with adding not from the same party into this because it's what we do anyway.
Right. Sandy King, are there any elected Democrats in Idaho?
Yeah,
any other discussion?
Mr.
Jessen?
After it goes to the Senate, we have staff check the legality and if we have a legal problem.
That's a consideration. We might be able to push it right now.
I don't have the objection to move that movement.
Colleagues, let me ask you a question about this. I was out of the room, and I understand that the issue is bipartisanship, and of course we've been educated by our good colleague from the panel in the area that he represents more than any one of us because he is truly a representative of an independent party. We're all just either Republicans or Democrats, so tell you what. But the intention of this measure is, in fact, to represent as broadly as possible the group of folks that we all do, in fact, represent. So I don't know. We tried to give the leadership the widest possible latitude, and out of respect for the leadership, and it does change. There's always been an intention, and I think always the practice of appointing minority members from wherever, from whatever party it happens to be in. So I don't know if we have to be as specific as saying naming the party. And if we are silent on the issue, I guess we would have to be relying on the person of the institution to make the representatives or to assume that leadership will not ignore the minority party.
One point of clarification, Mr. Chair. Does the Senate have proportionality rules?
They have proportionality rules.
Okay. But the House does. And why couldn't we put it in there that our appointment vis-a-vis the House proportionality rules, and then we've got it covered.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would give you an answer to that, Representative Cruz. I don't think it's necessary for us to recite the statute that the bodies will follow their own rules. So if there's a proportionality rule in the House, they will follow that rule. If they decide to get rid of that rule, they won't have to follow that rule. But I don't think we need to cite those rules in the statute. I think those bodies will follow them.
We're just trying to kind of educate the Senate and bring them along a little bit here, that's all.
Chair.
You have actually sent us a couple of representatives that are educating us in the Senate's Russian experience. Yes. Point of clarification, too.
Mr. Chair, members, as a matter of fact, when I turned in a request for these amendments, I did put in the bipartisan concept, and Jeanette is the one that called me and said her recommendation would be that it remain silent to allow independent party members, other party members, to be able to sit on such a forum.
Did that answer the question?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that answers the question.
I raised your question.
Oh, Ben and Jack, case representative Jensen. Oh, that's what we're doing.
In the Senate, we have no proportionality rule. We fight over that every session. And we have at least one set of appointments where no Democrat appointed.
Which is?
Which is the forestry task force has had two members, Republican members of the Senate for the last 2 years. And not that, like I said, not that anybody's fighting over that one at this point, but it does indicate to me that if you have a limited number of positions, and it's something that is considered to be important, that it may in the Senate be a little more difficult to sort out just who ought to be on there. And it seems to me that putting something in there that says they couldn't all be from the same party ought to take care of it. I mean, I'd be happy with Representative Cruz's proportionality, but with three members, we're probably talking about the same thing.
Senator, I don't know how to answer your criticism of the Forestry Task Force, but I don't remember it being just two members of the Senate and the Forestry Task Force. I think there's three. I think there's three from the House and three from the Senate. But that, notwithstanding our faulty memory, is there another question on the issue of a makeup on this commission? President Thompson, did you have a question?
Well, I really am concerned that the independent party, we have to be careful how we word it. And so if that's legislative council's opinion that we need to keep quiet about the issue, if we put the wording in, it does. Bob's going to look really funny running around here, only a third of them.
Actually, the Representative Thompson, I see another problem. If there was an independent or another minority party, they would be essentially required to serve on almost every committee.
That's right.
It's just not possible. I guess my point is I still believe that the institution has a tradition of bipartisanship. Representative Stark.
I think that you're the chair on that, but I think that we could add wording that would require that not all, and then that would allow the opportunity for...
Can we just put a margin note to honor diversity? I just don't think we need to specify that. Put it this way, I'm reluctant to put some kind of restrictions on the decisions that are made by leadership, no matter which party, independent, Republican, or Democrat, happens to be.
I would disagree
Are we more than a question mark? Oh, darn, because I would have said that I'm going to start moving like this. Colleagues, I again would rely on legal counsel and traditions of the institution. I don't think we need to
specify.
No.
Are we in
work
session?
No.
Can we go there?
We can go there. We are in work session. We're in work session on 1161. Representative Starr has a motion.
I move to ask one amendment to Senate Bill 1161.
Is there any discussion on the motion? That objection, oh, that one's removed.
Discussion and objection can be put in.
Is there any objection on the motion? Do you have objection?
Yeah.
So noted. Senator Duke has objection. Other objections? Dash ones are amended in. Oh. Representative Lankus, did you have an objection? So noted. Any other objections?
I could have objected this too.
Then we have the call the roll, please, Steve, on the dash one.
Lord. He's going to compress that in, folks.
No more sugar for this committee.
All right. Aye.
Aye.
So.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hold on a second. See the count is?
One? Two.
One in favor, two are no votes, and two
are excused. Connor was an aye.
Do you have a senator? Two ayes, senator, and eight senators.
All right, so we have two and eight. That carries the motion, I think, doesn't it?
No, so we've got to have three out of the senator.
Okay.
Sure.
Motion fails. Now, reference star.
Conceptually amend. The death one another.
And your conceptual amendment is?
Would be that not all of the members of this commission should be from the same.
Mr. Chair.
Discussion?
The death one amendments were just voted down.
Yes, they were.
We need to have a reconsideration to be able to.
We can actually we can take any number of motions conceptually moving a different amendment, so we don't have to reconsider.
But he specifically referenced the best one amendment. I just don't want us to do something procedurally wrong, so we're going to get. Correct. So we need to reconsider it.
The chair will accept the motion to reconsider the dash one amendment.
I move.
Is there any objection to reconsideration of dash one amendment? Without objection, so ordered. For Senator, your conceptual amendment.
Conceptually amended.
Better you speed up the process. The usual thing to do.
Party affiliation.
Is the dash one conceptual amendment understood by the committee? Is there any further discussion on the dash one conceptual? Without objection, so ordered. Motion to start, do you have a motion?
Yes.
We have to move, Resident Starr, we have to move the dash ones as conceptually amended.
Yes. That's the motion.
That was the motion. I thought that was the motion. Is there objections? Seeing that, so ordered. Resident Starr, do you have a question? Or Senator, yeah.
I
hope they are, yeah.
She's standing to be embarrassing. Okay, this is one of the things I've seen on C-SPAN. That's true. Actually, this would be entertaining. This would be like when they show the parliament. Screaming at each other, you know.
Oh, I love that.
I watch that all the time. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Prime Minister's question about politics. Yeah. That's great.
All right.
I love it. So the right honorable gentleman.
Colleagues, we will call the roll. The motion to represent Star was?
Down Senate 1161 as amended with the death one conceptually amended.
That was pretty good. Let's call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 1161, as conceptually amended, moves to the floor. The chair will carry on the Senate side, and Representative Starr would like to carry on the House side.
Absolutely.
Representative Starr will carry on the House side. Close the work session, close the public session on 1161, and with acknowledgments and thanks to Senator Duke for her courtesy vote of moving that.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We'll open the hearing on Hospital 3229, and we'll start with a staff overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 3229 establishes fully functioning stream criteria as an additional method to determine water quality in compliance with the Water Pollution Control Act. You do have at your seat a dash two amendment that replaces section one of the bill only. If you'll look at dash two amendment, they direct the Department of Environmental Quality to develop proposed water quality standards and associated criteria that may be used to define a healthy stream using fully functioning stream characteristics that are consistent with the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. It then allows the use of those adopted standards as an alternative to other quantitative standards. It requires the director to appoint a scientific technical advisory body with a makeup. If you'll look on the dash two amendments, you'll see the proposed makeup of representation on that advisory body starting on page one, line 20. Those professionals with experience in hydrology, rain science, agriculture, aquatic, macro invertebrates, fisheries, biology, and environmental science. It does require that those standards be developed within this coming biennium and requires a report back to the 71st Legislative Assembly. In the original bill, we do still have language in the original bill, section 2 and 3, are not changed by the amendment. We do have a blank here, and it appropriates money to DEQ to implement this measure. There is a blank, and we do not currently have a prior reference to Ways and Means, but I would suggest that it go there to fill in that blank. And then section 3 is the emergency clause. It takes effect July 1st, 1999. We did receive a no revenue impact. A fiscal statement is at your seat on the dash twos. You'll see estimated cost $435,680 in this coming biennium to accomplish the development of these standards.
Any questions at this point? We have a list of people wanting to testify. Can we hear from those? I'd like to call Gene Wilkinson and Pete Test. Surprise? Sure, would you rather Mike Llewellyn? Sure. Folks, draw straws, whoever wants to lead off.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Llewellyn, Administrator of the Water Quality Division with DEQ. I'm here in support of this bill. I know that last session, during the end of the session, there was a lot of discussion about the concept of an alternative temperature standard, I believe was the term that was used. This year, there's been several discussions with a broad set of stakeholders about developing what is now being characterized as the Healthy Stream Standard. What we would envision is that this development of a Healthy Stream Standard would move towards integrating more biological and physical characteristics of healthy streams and water bodies into the approach that we're using here in Oregon, with less reliance on the current approach of single numeric criteria that are focused primarily on water chemistry. The one thing that I would say is that there's very little precedent across the country for the development of this type of a standard, but I believe that because of a lot of the discussion that's centered primarily around the temperature standard and the Endangered Species Act here in Oregon, but I think that there's a lot of interest in trying to move towards a more robust approach to water quality standards development, and we're certainly supportive of moving in that direction. So So I'll be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Any questions, Mr. Lowell?
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, in the fiscal issues, FTEs, would that be limited duration, Mike? If you're going to, once you develop a standard, would that be just limited duration positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Charno, I think that would be acceptable if we can get through the product of developing the standard. The only thing that I would add is that my understanding of the way this bill is constructed is we would report back to the legislature after the development of the conceptual standard. If that standard then was to move ahead in terms of adoption, we would still need to have some resource to carry through the formal triennial review process with EPA. It wouldn't need the full complement of staff that would develop the standard, but there would be a need for probably the lead person, the one FTE, to carry the standard forward through EPA in an NIMS consultation.
Any other questions? Okay. Kate, whoever.
Chairman Medley, members of the committee, I'm Jean Underhill-Wilkinson with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. It is true that there is a big gap between our water quality standards and what landowners are knowledgeable about and what they have control over. For instance, the temperature standard, landowners have no idea at this point how to change their management practices or do things so that the streams running through their property will meet that standard. So it makes perfect sense, if we have to have standards, to gear them more towards conditions on the land that have effects on water quality. That makes perfect sense. And the Cattlemen's Association is in support of that type of effort. However, we're forced to remain neutral on this bill because we do have a couple of concerns. We would hope that the intent of this bill is that if healthy streams criteria, if that's what we're going to call it, is established, then if landowners, if streams running through property meet that healthy streams criteria, then landowners will be in compliance with all the water quality standards. Even though the stream meets this healthy streams criteria, the stream may not be meeting the water quality criteria that we currently have in place, such as the 64-degree temperature standard. But we are hoping if landowners meet this new healthy streams criteria, they will be in compliance, deemed to be in compliance with all the standards. And I think that there is a little bit of confusion about that, and perhaps some of the proponents or supporters of this bill may not have the same intentions in mind with regard to that issue. So that does give us a little bit of concern. I don't want to put Mike on the spot, but perhaps to the extent he can, he might be able to address that. And that concludes my testimony.
We're pushing microphones towards you, Ms. Llewellyn. Mr. Chair, I think the issue that Jean has raised is a valid issue. What I would say is, again, going back to the precedent concern, that right now we have a situation under the Federal Clean Water Act that is termed independent applicability. What that means is if you violate any individual water quality standard, even if you meet all the other criteria, and in some situations, as I think we've talked about in this committee, where there's a perception, at least, that the beneficial use is still there, like fish are there, but you have a temperature violation and it's a disconnect. That's leading to the 303D listing and TMDL development. Ideally, if we can come up with this healthy stream standard, we could try to address situations where there might be a violation of the temperature criteria under certain frequency and duration. However, the overall health of that water body is such that the fish biologists, NIMS, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, ODF&W, or others say that the overall health of that watershed is supportive of the fish. We need to work through that. It's both a technical issue, and ultimately it's going to be an issue that has to be reviewed and approved by EPA in consultation with the Federal Fish Agency. It's going to be a hard road to go down, but I think if we try to move ahead and define this standard a little bit better, I think we can be much clearer about the question that Gene's raised here.
I recommend this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I recall, when we did the use sustainability bill last session, the department absorbed the cost of that within their staff. I can see where potentially it could be a problem with the fiscal on this bill. Is there any opportunity for the department to get this program started within present staff?
Mr. Chair, the problem that we have is we have currently two FTEs that are associated with the water quality standards program. We have a tremendous backlog in terms of the criteria that we need to be adopting to stay current with the Federal Clean Water Act requirements. I think that, quite frankly, this concept, because it is unprecedented, is something, and to be very candid, that there's skepticism on all sides of the equation. However, I think that we do have at least the interest right now of EPA and the National Marine Fisheries Service to try to take a look at this. But currently, our workload associated with the traditional standards that EPA in particular is concerned that we're far behind on has to maintain pace. So this is, although it is an important issue, I think that we simply need additional resources to take this on.
We actually have a couple of folks in line. Representative Morgan, Representative Lundquist, and then Representative.
My question is that obviously the EPA and NIMS are going to have to buy into whatever the end product is here. What's the nature of the discussions that you've had with them to this point concerning this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I've had several discussions with both EPA, National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on this very issue. I don't want to put words in their mouth because none of these discussions, I think, are characterized as a formal position by the agencies, but I think it's safe to say that both EPA and NIMS and the Fish and Wildlife Service are supportive of us moving ahead to try to define this concept better. Ultimately, I think with all the stakeholders involved, the devil's going to be in the details to see ultimately what this product looks like and how it's different from the approach we have now. But I specifically tried to get out of NIMS and EPA is, are we going down a wrong path here ultimately? Because if they didn't like even the abstract concept here, I think that they would have signaled that to me. So I'm somewhat optimistic that if we spend the next couple of years working through the detail and have NIMS, EPA, and Fish and Wildlife Service at the table, not let them wait till the end and we have them in the product, I think we can get there.
But may I have
a follow-up for Ben Morgan?
But I think I heard you say that EPA was not going to allow you to slack off on doing the TMDLs or any of the other things that they're requiring.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, that's correct. We still have to move ahead on our TMDLs based on the existing standards that are on the books. That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to address this to Commissioner Hill. Do you think there's a potential that these might come out more stringent than what we have under the Clean Water Act, and we might get into difficulty?
Chairman Ferrioli, Representative Lundquist, that is definitely a possibility. Rather than having the water quality standards that we currently are trying to deal with and comply with, we may have multiple standards in their place that might be as difficult and awkward to deal with as the current standards are. On the other hand, we could have a very positive outcome where we have standards that are based on conditions on the land that constitute a healthy stream, and those conditions and the standards are ones that landowners can deal with and live by and manage around to comply with them. So it could go both ways. It will be a negative outcome if we develop healthy stream criteria and streams may be in compliance with that criteria. And at the same time, even though they're in compliance with that criteria, the current standards still exist and we're still out of compliance with the existing standards, then there's no relief for us out there. And so that would potentially be a negative outcome. It's a real gamble. And but I think we need to be going down this road eventually and accept some of the risks.
Follow up for Russell Lindquist.
I absolutely support this concept because, you know, we worked on it last time. I just think, I just want us to be careful as we go down this road that we don't, we keep our antennas out, I guess.
So, since I think your admonition is a good admonition, the only thing that I think that overrides that caution is that this focuses the attention on the stream function, not on an arbitrary but scientific standard. And what we have, for instance, is a 64-degree standard, which is based on the biology of the fish, not on the stream function. And at least this focuses on the stream function. Where the area that concerns me is not the temperature or the water quality or even the water quantity, but the hydrology of the stream system. In other words, a fully functioning stream system might be a braided system. It might be a meandering system. And that may have tremendous and terrible implications for landowners that are in riparian areas. So it's just one of those things that there are real complex, as you pointed out, real complex considerations to make here.
Chairman Ferrioli, if I may, I would also hope that, and it seems to say it in this proposed bill, in these proposed amendments, that when this criteria, when the group of scientists comes up with proposed criteria, that they could bring it back to this body, and you could take a close look at what has been done and potentially the science behind what criteria they have come up with and whether it is appropriate or not.
So you're recommending the conceptual amendment unless we don't like the standard. All right. Representative King had a question, then Representative Messerly, then Representative Morgan.
Two, maybe Mr. Rowland can answer the first one. The proposed funding for this is at ballot measure 66, the general fund. Maybe they can answer that.
For the record, Pete Sass, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Originally, at the beginning of the session, there was two elements of water quality that several of us were looking at for potential 66 funding, yes. One was the sustainability analysis work and this particular bill working on this standard, which is a continuation of last year's bill that we tried to do that was much more complex. So, yes, the original idea was to look for Nature 66 money on this, and then if we couldn't find it, if we couldn't get the other way, I guess it was just a dead issue, but it was one of the efforts we were trying to do from the water quality standpoint. As part of my testimony, when we get to I will kind of tell you our reasoning there and why it was necessary for the landowners and us to pursue this kind of standard to keep agriculture and a lot of people on board with the process that we're doing as far as the Oregon plan. So when I get a chance for my testimony, I can maybe go further.
I guess that was your takeaway, you can get it. The other thing is that we've had testimony on another bill that was high quality waters, and it's my understanding as we talk through this that this is a different issue than dealing with high quality waters. That these standards would be different than what we do with high quality waters, and there's no crossover of that. They're their own separate issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mike, you mentioned the compliance and being on time frame with EPA. My question to you is, I think we were on a 10-year time frame for 10 deals at least. We've got 8 years left, I would guess. Couple that with the fact that the EPA has not adopted our temperature standard. Would that leave us some room to at least go back and discuss with them whether we could try at least doing some research to see if this was feasible?
Mr. Chair, you're correct. EPA has not approved that suite of temperature standards. Although, as I indicated the other day in the Raising News discussion, it's our understanding that they will be approving those standards eventually with a big caveat. And the caveat is they want to go back once again and look at the temperature criteria very specifically. I think that our preference in DEQ is that since that's a given, or it appears it's a given, that we have that discussion in this context rather than going back and once again talking about whether it's 64 or 62 or 66, that we get into a broader discussion with the services and EPA about the overall healthy streams standard approach. So either way, we're going to have to be talking about temperature once again with these folks, but my preference would be to broaden it into the healthy streams dialogue rather than just a narrow focus on the temperature to date once again.
Question for from Representative Morgan, please.
So would I be correct in characterizing this as the Oregon plan is to the Endangered Species Act, House Bill 3229 would be kind of the Oregon plan for the Clean Water Act?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan. I think that what we're talking about here is definitely an evolution of the way that a water quality standard is developed. There are a couple of states in the country who have moved more, again, away from sort of a reliance on just a chemistry approach to water quality and looking at the issue being that in some cases you can meet all of the chemical criteria in a stream, and yet you're not seeing the beneficial use. The fish aren't there, and that's been, I think, a conundrum here. By developing a standard that goes beyond just the reliance on chemistry as the sole method of saying this stream is healthy or it's not healthy, we'll incorporate biology and the physical nature of these stream systems. I think that's an issue we've been struggling with here, not only in Oregon, but in the Pacific Northwest with the Endangered Species Act. So I think this is an evolution of the Clean Water Act driven by the ESA here in the Pacific Northwest. It's not everything that we're dealing with under the Clean Water Act, but I think the temperature issue has become, I think, the most visible debate that we've been having, obviously. And I think this would help move it along into a broader context.
Is that a yes or a no?
Well, I think if you're, I'm sorry, Representative Morgan, I think if your question is this an overarching issue with regard to the Clean Water Act in Oregon, I would say no, it's not. But it's clearly trying to address the one specific issue that I think is hanging a lot of people up in terms of understanding the direction that we're trying to take with the application of water quality standards.
Representative Morgan, I think the issue here is whether or not there's an adaptive management standard that's not strictly science-based. And if you've got strange functions in areas where you've got fish, but you can show that some of the standards are not met, and in places where you have all the standards met and you don't have fish, clearly there's other functions going on there. We've never been able to make those cases for baseline studies on a stream. We've always had a standard. So I guess this focuses on the stream, and I think that's probably the best possibility that we can have.
I think what intrigues me about this bill is that it focuses on the reality of the situation instead of the chemical ideal that you're talking about, and does attempt to put some on-the-ground pragmatic standards together.
Further questions? Do you have another witness that would like to testify? We've heard about all we need to. Mr. Seth, did you care to add to the public record?
Briefly, yes, I'll try to be really brief. For the record, Pete Seth, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. This is kind of a continuation of the effort we made last year to try and move this direction with a standard that is more inclusive. You were involved with the bill, Chairman Mary, and so was Representative Lundquist as far as trying to do that. It was quite complex and we had a lot of concern, but since then we've been working really desperately with research work in the Baker area on the Burnt River. But there's been cooperative research going on with DEQ, Bureau of Reclamation, to kind of address some of the characteristics of the stream you might be looking at to set such a standard to see if it would work. Also, the work that Dr. Kruger had been doing with OSU had been investigating some of those standards, and it was nuts that we got through when we sat down and decided that, you know, there's a possibility we could come up with something that might work here as a standard that would be, I don't want to use the alternative, but something that we could use that would be more obviously the standard and looking at the stream. So with that, you know, all of a sudden everybody said, this is kind of interesting, it's worth a shot, which we hoped would happen with the research and the stuff we did earlier. and this has kind of moved into a realm where how can this be used? Well, if you know a little bit about the water quality standards, there is an effort that once you get on the 303D list, if over time you've done everything you can do, then the standard that stream sits at and the stream field, it becomes a site-specific standard for the stream. The use attainability analysis does what Co-Chairman Farioli said. They look at it, and everything may not be reached, but at the beneficial uses, it's in good shape. It also puts it into a site-specific situation related to the standards that the stream needs as far as chemicals. This moves that direction also by setting up a standard that if it's reached, in all reality, that's the natural state and allows some movement within the realm of those quantitative standards that are pretty solid. And we think this is the angle we're going to go. The states of Montana and Wyoming are trying to work with a similar standard idea. And the key issue here is the temperature standard is a stumbling block with the agriculture community as it relates to the Oregon plan and the water quality issues with agriculture and 10-10 planning. If we can in some way develop a standard that's understandable and they feel is adequate and will work, it will help long ways in us getting the cooperation we need to do the 10-10 planning, because that 10-10, that one standard has always been kind of in the way when people just automatically saying, let's go and get things done, because a lot of people feel it's not reachable. You have a 64-degree standard, and it's not site-specific and it's statewide, and it doesn't ring true to many people. So it's hoped that if we can develop a standard similar to this, along with the use attainability analysis, we can go a long way to be a leader in the country, try and get off of the kind of standards we've gotten back onto, let's say, on the ground standards. So we're strongly realizing the potential. This can go either way. Strongly willing to take the run at it to see if we can do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chess, for your testimony. You clarified it in my mind to be clear that. So I really appreciate that testimony. Mr. Chair, this is a good bill. I suggest we do it right away.
I'll let another gentleman who did sign up.
Thank you, and before you leave the podium, Mr. Chair, Senator Carno has a question.
I'll move over to one side of that.
Mr. Carno, you may come forward.
I think in your memo you indicated you showed strongly support of the Dash 1 amendments. I don't see those.
The Dash 1s were
Cannon Grove.
Cannon Grove. And
so they incorporated into that too?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's just basically a little wording change. It was in change first.
We're not dealing with the Dash 2s.
I think we are.
Mr. Myron, do you...
Jim Myron of Oregon Trout. I've been looking all sessions for a bill of the Farm Bureau that I can support. I think I found one. Actually, we, Oregon Trout, does support the development of healthy stream criteria, but I would like to draw your attention on the Dash 2 amendments to lines 11, 12, and 13, because Pete and I worked very carefully to craft these, and the way I look at that language is that this does not set up an alternative to the...
Byron, do you have the hand and gross versions of the Dash 2?
No, I don't.
Could somebody provide Mr. Myron, so we have the right reference to our document?
How come they have the Dash 2s and we only have hand and gross? That's another question. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
What was the word you used earlier, referencing?
On
chapter meeting.
On the hand and gross version, down at the bottom of page 1, line 17, I, J, and K, the new standards may be used to adjust certain quantitative standards to more site-specific standards when proven appropriate. So I worked with Pete on this language so that we didn't set up a language that inferred that this is a way around the standard. This may be a way to eventually make some changes or adjustments to the standard, but I don't think it gets to where Gene wants to go, to just simply comply with the standards if you have a healthy functioning stream. We look at the healthy stream criteria as a way to assist landowners in complying with water quality standards by getting better condition on the land, and that's what we're supporting here. So I also want to just make mention of the fact that in the working group, the last working group meeting that we had, we were looking at a draft budget of around $500,000, which included one quarter FTE for ODF&W so that they could participate in this too. It's essential that these agencies get this money. If they don't, and they're expected to just take it out of their hides, there's going to be a real problem. So,
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Representative
Cruz. Yeah, not necessarily from Mr. Ryan. As I read this bill, this is basically where DEQ knew they were going to have to go anyway, isn't it? I mean, I remember when you first came out with your COC list, I mean, you knew on the front end that you were going to have to do some adjusting on a site-specific basis, because that was the dialogue that we had 6 years ago on that stuff. So this really doesn't differ from what you kind of envisioned as your mission anyway, does it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, I think the part, I wasn't around then, I wasn't too far away, I was up in Washington. I think the problem is that the standard that we adopted said, in essence, that the criteria is 64 degrees, and then if you can't get there after you've done everything you're supposed to do, the standard becomes what's remaining in the stream. That's what went through the EQC. That is explicitly what EPA and NIMS are rejecting. Their argument is if the 64 degrees is the biological need of the fish and you violate 64 degrees currently, administratively under the Clean Water Act, you have no discretion other than to put that stream either back on the, or keep it on the list, or as Pete mentioned, go through a use attainability analysis, which is a very elaborate, protracted process that essentially tries to argue that the fish should never be there in the first place, and I think that's a problem. So what we're trying to find here is a way to build into the standard this variability, so it's not so much focused on a yes or no decision as it is 60, above 64 is bad, below 64 is okay, and try to acknowledge that in some stream situations you can have higher than 64 degree water as long as there are many other aspects of that watershed that are healthy that currently aren't necessarily incorporated into our standards. That's the real problem with that original approach.
But on the front end of all of this, there was a basic assumption that EPA was going to buy into this plan of the ability to adjust when we determined that we couldn't attain certain standards. And so, I mean, this does speak to what we thought we were going to be able to do 6 years or so ago when we first set off on this course. So it's a piece of work.
I think the key here is the idea of adaptive management, and we need to set some criteria by which we can measure how we get to that place. And if we did have a set of descriptors for a properly or fully functioning stream, then at least we would be able to make the case for some adaptability under the Clean Water Act. Any further questions from the panel? If not, we'll go into work session on the bill. Of course, we know that there's a mandatory referral on this to Ways and Means. Unless we're all willing to vote just to take the money away from Water Resources Department to fund this. Oh, she's here. Oh, my goodness. You won't see it. You'll see it. We're in work session on Senate Bill, House Bill 3229. Colleagues, what's your pleasure on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Scar.
I move the dash to amendments to House Bill 3229.
The dash to amendments to House Bill 3229 have been moved. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scar is recognized.
I would move the House Bill 3229 to the floor subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is that the way we do that?
No, not at this point. Not at this point. Yeah. Ways and Means. Not subsequently, but directly. Do not pass go.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Ways and Means. Representative Carr moves the amended version of House Bill 3229 to Ways and Means of the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We will ask the author of the bill to carry, or some message we will carry in the House, but it actually goes to full weight means, so we can get it out of full weight and get it out. Whatever emerges from the way we need. And we are close on the work session and the public hearing on House Bill 3229. Open the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3620. Staff will overview the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3620 deals with water right permits. It allows a water right permit holder to change place of water use to non-contiguous lands if the change is for the benefit of species listed as sensitive, threatened, or endangered under state or federal law. Under current law, a water right permit holder may only change the point of diversion or place of use if the new location, the land that you're going to use that water on, is contiguous with land owned or controlled by the permit holder. So that is the change to current law that House Bill 3620 would make. There's no revenue impact statement, no fiscal impact statement, but I do believe that this is an agreement that comes to us through the Water Resources Department, and Martha is here to talk to us about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, you have testimony there, I think, from me, and I urge the committee support of House Bill 3620. This bill comes to us because of an inland land company agricultural development that will focus on food crops that can be processed and packed in eastern Oregon plants. Without question, this project is important to Oregon's economy. For the purpose of the committee, it is too time-consuming to go into all of the complexities of what has taken place with inland land over the years. However, I would point out that it has taken 5 years of negotiations between the company and Water Resources Department, federal agencies, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and several others before reaching an agreeable solution to most everyone. As part of the compromise which was reached through multiple mediation sessions with the stakeholders during this past year, Inland has given up 15,518 acres and 727 CFS that was otherwise available to them for this development. Inland gave up this land and water to protect the Washington ground squirrel, a species that is listed as sensitive under the state law. In order to complete this transaction, Inland Land Company needs to be able to change the place of use of its water originally specified in the permit to a new location that is not contiguous to the original authorized land. Current law does not allow such a change, as staff has pointed out for us. However, House Bill 3620 is very limited in scope and would allow a water permit holder to use water on land that is not contiguous to the land originally authorized in the permit. However, HB 3620 would only permit such a change to benefit a species that is listed as sensitive, threatened, or endangered. I commend Inland Land Company, Martha Pagel, and the Director of Water Resource Department, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and all of the other stakeholders for their commitment to reaching a resolution on this issue that balances the needs of Oregon farmers, Oregon industry, and the needs of the threatened and endangered species. I would be pleased to answer any questions that you have and to listen to the testimony from the other witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Martha Pagel, Director of Water Resources Department. We are here in support of the measure and appreciate the introduction given by Representative Jensen. As indicated, this would amend current law relating to permit amendments. And those of you who are familiar with water rights are aware that once a water right has been fully perfected and certificated, the user, the holder of that water right, has fairly broad authority under current law to transfer that water right to other land. But current law is different with respect to the permit stage, and we are talking about the permit stage, not a fully certificated water right. And ordinarily, we don't allow transfers to occur at the permit stage. A few years back, the law was changed to allow some flexibility there to move to contiguous land if the original parcel of land, for example, that was proposed for development as a farm, turned out to be not as good quality of land as some other portion of the landowner's property. They could move the water right at the permit stage to that contiguous land. This bill would change current law by allowing the permit holder to move the permit to non-contiguous land when that's done for the benefit of a listed species. And this does assist us in dealing with the inland land situation, as Representative Jensen described. But I think it's also a useful tool to have available to create incentives to landowners and permit holders to work with the listing agencies to develop conservation plans that would protect certain sensitive lands and still allow some economic use to be made of the water right permit. So we think it's a good general tool, and it is a good step toward balancing economic and environmental needs, and we support the measure.
Any questions of Ms. Pagel?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just
Senator Nelson.
In this whole process, this Washington ground squirrel issue in a period of 5 years actually came up after about 4 years and 6 months. Is that about correct?
Chair, Senator Nelson, a petition for listing as threatened came up late in the game,
yeah. And I guess that my comment is just in a sense of fairness that this fellow went through this whole process for 5 years. I'm sure that there was a knowledge, at least my understanding, that the group developed the petition for the listed species knew about this several years in advance but did not bring it forth until it appeared that there had been an agreement being made and they brought it forth. Whether that's true or not, the appearance of evil is probably just about as bad as evil itself, and I feel that the environmental groups are fairly insensitive, and in all sense of fairness, I do have to commend Representative Jensen for his patience in working with this, and Martha also for her help.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Martha.
Reed Benson and Jim Myron, would you both like to come up?
Oh, Lord. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Reed Benson, the Executive Director of Water Watch. With me is Jim Myron, Conservation Director of Oregon Trout. Water Watch is a nonprofit conservation group that has been in existence since 1985, working to restore and protect in-stream flows throughout Oregon. We've got about 800 members. And we've been actively involved in this issue for an issue of the proposed inland land development, the proposed development of the Boeing Tract for a number of years. And we oppose House Bill 3620. House Bill 3620 would fundamentally alter a very careful compromise that was struck in 1995 relating to where water could be used under a permit. Up until that time, it was illegal for water to be used on lands that wasn't listed in a permit. In 1995, that was changed in a carefully struck compromise that allowed that water to be used outside on lands not listed, provided that it was contiguous to the permitted lands, and certain other conditions were met. House Bill 3620 would open a very large loophole in that requirement and eliminate the requirement that it be contiguous. One of the concerns we have with House Bill 3620 as it's drafted is that the there aren't any real standards associated with it. The standard as it is drafted on lines 19 and 20 of page 2 is that the change to non-contiguous land be in furtherance of mitigation or conservation efforts undertaken for the purpose of benefiting a species listed as sensitive, threatened, endangered under the Oregon or federal endangered species laws. There are a number of veteran legislators on this committee, and I think you all understand how loose that language is. Sitting here listening to some of the wordsmithing that you all were undertaking earlier in the evening, it's clear that there's a real sense on this committee of what tight drafting is, and I would submit that this isn't it. The other concern, there are a number of possibilities that could tighten up this language. It could be a requirement for a formal habitat conservation plan, or a requirement that the conservation measures are actually determined to provide significant benefits for listed species, but instead only that the only requirement is that they be in furtherance of efforts undertaken for a particular purpose. Finally, the purpose language is interesting. This particular project involves both species listed as sensitive under the State Endangered Species Act, that being the Washington ground squirrel, and species listed as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act, that being Snake River salmon and Mid-Columbia steelhead. In this case, from certain testimony, the indication is that the conservation efforts here are entirely for the purpose of the Washington ground squirrel, listed under the state law, rather than the endangered snake river salmon listed under federal law. So there's a real question about whether the listing agency, in other words, National Marine Fisheries Service, that governs snake river salmon would have any sign-off associated with this whatsoever. Finally, the requirement that the listing agency determine whether the change to non-contiguous land is sufficient raises some questions. First of all, because the standard itself is so vague, it's a little hard to tell exactly what they would be or would not be signing off on. Second, there's real concerns about whether the listing agencies are free to make their own decisions based on what they think is the right thing for the listed species. In this particular case, relating to the inland land development, four members of the legislature of this committee sent a letter to the Fish and Wildlife Commission regarding the proposed emergency listing of the Washington ground squirrel, explicitly threatening the budget of the Fish and Wildlife Commission if the emergency listing went forward. If we're to have confidence that a sign-off of a listing agency means that the listed species protection is going to be adequate, the agencies have to be free to do their jobs independently. And the concern is that that in this case and in other cases, that might not be the case. And thus, if the law doesn't have the standards, doesn't have strong or clear standards for protection, and the agencies don't have the kind of independence that that they need, there's a question about how strong the protection is for certain sensitive and endangered species that this law actually provides. We don't necessarily see it. We understand the importance of this issue to Representative Jensen, Senator Nelson's district. We understand the importance of the permittee. We understand the support that this project has in the ag community, among many in the legislature and in the Water Resources Department. And we understand that also that we've taken some heat for taking a fairly strong stand raising concerns about this project. But from our standpoint, these are state lands. They are at least over the long haul at about $2 an acre for what turns out to be a very highly valuable agricultural product. More water will be used in this development than the entire city of Portland uses in a year. Despite the jeopardy opinion issued by the National Marine Fisheries Service on this project for the impact on Snake River salmon, the project will result in the destruction of rare and valuable wildlife habitat, although we understand that there may be less habitat rolled up as a result of the conservation agreement. And finally, there is this proposal to change law statewide that in a way that we're concerned does not provide adequate protection. And so we therefore cannot support House Bill 3620, but we think that if a good share of the and we believe that a good share of the Oregon public, if they knew the facts, would feel pretty comfortable with our taking that position. I'd be happy to take questions.
When you look at this project, is it not true that this whole project could be under plow if the owner so chose?
I think there would be some concerns under the Oregon Endangered Species Act at a minimum if that were to happen. But yeah, we understand that that dry land farming is is an option available to the developers.
And if I might, in this contiguous situation, which seems to be the criteria here that you're staking your opinion on, is the fact that in one case it's contiguous, in another case it's not contiguous. So what we have here, in fact, is we have a situation where if a person owned a parcel of land and a half mile down the road, he did not own the land, and then again he owned the land, so we had an intermittent lack of ownership there. In one case, you're saying it would not be appropriate for a person to do that without going through the process you're talking about. Whereas if the neighbor owned the same stretch of land or he bought that intermittent land, then it would be okay. I guess I fail to see the logic of the fact that in one case you're very concerned about it just because it's not contiguous, but on the other case it's just a matter of it being contiguous from now, it's okay. I don't follow that logic.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lundquist, excuse me, that issue was discussed at some length in the discussions about the earlier bill in 1995 that changed the law from requiring that the water be applied only to land listed in the permit to allow it to move essentially outside the permit boundaries. And I think the reason why the requirement that the land be contiguous was put in was really so that there would be some kind of standard. That there had to be a way to draw a line somewhere so you would know sort of what was acceptable and what was not. And at least that's sort of the way I remember it. So we've already strayed farther than we were comfortable with from the requirement that when you get a permit, that's the land you irrigate.
Later on.
Any other questions? Jim?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Myron, representing Oregon Trout. We share many of the concerns that Water Watch has about this bill. We did participate along with Water Watch in some of the negotiating sessions on this project. At no time in my recollection during the sessions that we were invited to did we talk about the idea that if any of these lands had to be put into a conservation easement, that the water could be transferred somewhere else. But we were not invited to the last two meetings of the group, so obviously that occurred after
after we were uninvited from the process. But I guess my major concern is that since this does make such a substantial change to Oregon water law, if you want to give Bob Hale and Inland Land a special deal, then give them a special deal. But don't open it up to anybody anytime in the future, given all of the uncertainty and unintended consequences that might occur as a result of that. So I guess it would be my recommendation that you, if you want to do this, limit it to one particular individual. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Representative Starr, I don't know of any pending cases that this would be applicable to, but the way this is written, I'm not an attorney, but the way I read this is that any time in the future, if somebody wanted to move some water from one land to another that and it wasn't contiguous, as long as they could make the case that this was in mitigation for or a conservation plan of some kind for any state or federally listed species, they would be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chair, I'm sorry, I concur in that. Jim, as usual, has done excellent legal work.
I could follow up on that. Well, the state species, does it make sense?
But Representative Starr, as Reed Benson from Water Watch had mentioned earlier, there are no standards in here. So I fail to see how anybody could make an assessment of whether or not this mitigation or conservation effort would actually protect one of these species, because there's nothing to measure that by.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
And this question may be for Director Pagel, but it may be for and maybe for the Vice Chair too. When we have contiguous, usually we've got a way to figure out how to get the water back into the waterway. But when we're not contiguous, and not being familiar with the project, I don't know. I understand that we're getting water, to a new piece of ground, but I don't know how the water gets back into the waterway, and I was wondering, if that's part of the plan.
Martha, go ahead. Would you?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, if you're referring to the general process of return flows and how we gauge the impact of those, ordinarily, at the stage of issuing a permit, we haven't really identified where and how any return flows are going to occur. We go through a process of trying to estimate what would be the consumptive use of the water right, but we don't really know what's going to develop as a pattern of return flows. And that was one of the reasons early on where we had reservations about allowing the water right to move around when it's at the permit stage. But on the other hand, the flip side of that is that we haven't really built up any reliance on those return flows, which is the concern that we have about moving a water right and evaluating whether it's going to result in injury or other folks. It's when people build up that reliance, and that hasn't happened yet. So I think it's kind of a neutral, at least as far as I can tell.
Well, maybe Vice Chair can help. Maybe Representative Jensen can help. So it sounds to me like there is not a plan for how the water, once it's used in its process, would return back to the stream from which it came from, and which would then lead me to a question, under the law as it stands now, it sounds like, could we then be moving water from one watershed to another, and not all watersheds would, go to a river that goes to the ocean, and so that would change, downstream water uses, and I'm wondering why that would not be addressed in legislation then.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, from a practical standpoint, I think we're expecting that since this is the same water source and the person has some economic, you know, tie to developing it, that they're not going to be able to move it too very far away. We have other statutes that prohibit things like interbasin transfers, so I'm less concerned about it moving, that the return flows would go to a different watershed altogether, but it could return to the river in a different way than if it had been used on the originally proposed land.
Representative Lundquist.
First of all, I guess I'd like to thank Ms. Pagel for taking a positive we can do attitude in regard to this project. At the same time, I know you do a great job of following the law, of not doing it for a specific project, and I appreciate that. And we've had some conversations about that. And in your last commentary about, I think, the practical or the common sense approach, I think you have to keep this in mind. I must be a little bit critical of Water Watch in this process, only from the standpoint we have to somehow keep practicality in here, and even though I understand we have to follow the law and all that sort of thing. But, you know, from a practical standpoint here, if you have, and we're talking about returns, return flows, I guarantee you farmers up in this area that are going to put return flows will be out of business because they can't afford to pump that much water to just that return. With their technology to where they only put on enough water that they, you know, that the plant needs. I mean, that's the way the process works, and that's been good for the whole area. I just hope that, speaking somewhat, as I said, critical, and yet I just hope that we can somehow pull ourselves together as citizens of Oregon, because I really disagree with you that if all Oregon knew what this project was, that they would think this would be, you know, not a beneficial use of our natural resource. I guess that's more of a comment than a question, but I feel very strongly about this, that we need to somehow keep the balance in here for all of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lundquist, if I could respond to that. This is an issue that generates strong feelings on all sides. As I say, I understand the importance of this issue, and I think that I don't quibble with what you're saying about return flows from this particular project. I have a feeling there aren't going to be any, because this is going to be a pretty efficient agricultural development. These guys are paying a lot for this water, and they're going to have to pump it some distance. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of waste associated with this. I wouldn't begin to argue that. Again, our concerns on this relate to it being state-owned land, leased cheaply for originally for a space age industrial park that wasn't built. That this is an issue of for us. It's about salmon. It's about flows needed for salmon on the Columbia. It's about the Endangered Species Act. It's about protecting wildlife habitat, and in this case, in the case of House Bill 3620, it's about protecting the integrity of state law. And those are important values, and we understand they're important values on the other side. There's no question about that. I think, as I said, this issue generates strong feelings on all sides. I understand that perceptions in your district are oftentimes different than ours, and I think that's one reason why, you know, the city of Umatilla wants a prison, and the city of Wilsonville is, you know, fighting like heck to keep it out. That sometimes it's people perceive things a different way.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we look at this this whole scene and everything we're doing, would you agree that fairness should be a criteria that we operate on? Honesty and fairness.
Chair, Senator Jensen, how would I argue with that?
Wouldn't it be reasonable then to say that Bob Hale was reasonably honest and fair when he didn't take a couple V8 cats 5 years ago and go in before all of this issue appeared and dry land farming?
They had tried to go through a process that's prescribed by law.
Mr. Chair, representing against it, I personally don't have the history on this issue, and I'm going to have to sort of deflect some of those questions. I think there were some concerns about what was happening on the ground this past winter. But as far as 5 years ago, I'm sorry, I really can't speak to that.
Senator Nelson brought the issue up a little earlier, but the issue of the Washington brown squirrel. We talk about fairness. If this was going to be an issue, wouldn't you agree that it was fair that this would have been on Bob Hale's radar screen 5 years ago? Since it appears that it was on the radar screen of some people in the environmental community 5 years ago?
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I wasn't much involved 5 years ago, but I understand that there have been concerns for some time about the health of those populations and the scarcity of that habitat.
But it would be fair that he be notified as soon as that was on somebody's radar screen so he could make a management decision based on that.
I suspect, being the smart guy that he is, that Bob Hale probably had it on his radar screen. And certainly as we were in the negotiations, we had placed it on the radar screen that a petition for listing of the Washington ground squirrel was likely to be filed imminently.
I certainly, Mr. Chair, I can't speak for when Bob Hale knew about this, but I know I've been following the issue now for 3 years, and it was only in the last year, and I followed probably as closely as anyone other than the principal parties have. It certainly was never brought to my attention so that I could take it to my constituent and say this is a possibility. But if I could switch questions a little bit, are you aware of a NIMS biological opinion on the 8th of April, 1999?
April 1999.
Yeah, it's relating to water by the Bureau of Reclamation above the Lower Granite Reservoir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I'm not familiar with the NIMS biological opinion dated April 1999 related to that.
Mr. Chair, if I might read it. In a one-paragraph conclusion, NIMS declares that the United States Bureau of Reclamation projects are not likely, this is above the Lower Granite Reservoir, are not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of listed snake, steelhead, sockeye, spring, summer Chinook, or fall Chinook, or result in the destruction or adverse modifications of their critical habitat. Having previously then assumed that the Inland Land Single Project jeopardized the continued existence of the listed species, NIMS now declares that the federally operational strikes upstream involving millions of acre feet of water do not jeopardize the fish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I'll be very interested to read that. But I think that one of the reasons why National Marine Fisheries considered inland to be a problem was precisely for that reason, that there was already a vast amount of development upstream, which was already creating ongoing problems for Snake River salmon. And the concern was that if projects, if new water withdrawals were allowed that made things incrementally worse, that we were heading in the wrong direction when we needed to be restoring flows that already weren't adequate, partly because of the heavy development upstream in Idaho.
Sure. Are you aware that when the decision was made to move the withdrawal to the Little Creek pump station, that NIMS said they no longer had an investment in the project?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I know that position is the official legal position of the Corps of Engineers, and it will be interesting to see whether
that is considered to be consistent with the Endangered Species Act.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. Did you have another comment?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to respond briefly on the issue of whether there's a standard in the tightness of the language. It was our intent to develop language that did create a standard that required this action to be necessary in connection with protection of the listed species, and by making that the determination of the listing agency, that was our attempt to have it be a freestanding decision, not one made by the Water Resources Department, but to verify that it would, in fact, be for the benefit of the listed species. There may be ways to tighten it up the language here. We're open to that and are open to that, but I think that what we have here is a good starting point of declaring an intent that it be for that stated purpose, for the benefit of the listed species, and the decision is in the control of the listing agency.
Thank you, Martha. And couldn't your department develop administrative rules down the road if you saw the problem?
Mr. Chair, we certainly could if we saw problems. I would say that we weren't envisioning being administrative rulemaking on this at the outset.
Any other questions? With that, we'll close the public hearing and open the session for House Bill 3620. You've heard the motion. What I'd like to do, Senator Ferraioli, I think, would like to vote on this too. I'd like to stand at ease just very briefly. We understand he's on his way. So, Committee, let's just stand at ease.
If there's a way, maybe we could go ahead and move to the other dash amendments and get this out of the way. I understand I'm just going to get a couple minutes to make the explanation.
Well, we could, Mr. Chair, if we could vote and allow him to,
yeah,
to come back and vote.
Let's give Judith a minute here.
Because I know he can get hung up on the hallway. I realize why Senator Ferraioli's late for meetings today. I was trying to get down to the fiscal office with him, and every 10 feet, I can't talk about it anymore.
Could you go back on the walk for a minute?
No. I'm going to bring you word from the outer world. The sun is shining. Light streams through the window.
We have a comment from Representative Jensen.
I just wondered that Mr. Myron was deeply distressed. I thought that he might be sharing a bill with on the same side with Pete Harrison. I don't know what Pete is on this bill, but I suspect maybe that Mr. Myron can rest at ease. That he's not going to go home, two for two tonight.
Any other discussion before we vote? Yes, Representative Margie.
What this appears to me to be is just the ability to change the point of diversion of a water right, that we aren't talking about taking any more water out of a river. And that as the Oregon plan unfolds and as the Clean Water Act and the effects that those have unfold on the state of Oregon, we're going to find more and more situations arising where people are going to be faced with losing their livelihood and losing their property rights in order for species recovery laws to kick in. And I think that having this tool in the toolbox of the Water Resources Department will provide some reasonable solutions to those kinds of problems when they arise. And I think this is a good bill.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I better not.
Will the clerk call the roll?
I had a zinger, Bob.
Senator Jensen?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Representative Jensen, would you carry this?
I'd like to carry it on the Senate side of the case.
Okay, Senator Nelson on the Senate side.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like a vote explanation, Mr. Chairman. What kind of a vote was that?
I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
Just no more donuts for you.
Colleagues, we're not done. We need to do one other thing before we adjourn for the evening. And somebody lock the door, Senator Nelson. You're not leaving. Okay. On House Bill 3225, three amendments have been brought by Representative Thompson, and I'd like Representative Thompson to make a presentation of those amendments to the committee, upon which we will adjourn for the evening. Except we will also hear from other people that have come to testify. They're actually shaking their heads. Please let us go home. Mr. Campbell says, let my people go. Representative Thompson, I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 3225, and that is the ground binder that colleagues you have at your desk.
Chair, members, yes, this brown binder now contains every single amendment we have for 3225. Steve worked very hard all day today to put this together so you have it all in one place, so please don't lose this.
Okay, before I open the public hearing on House Bill 3225, Steve, thank you for the binder. Have another piece of cake. Okay, House Bill 3225 is you're open in public hearing, and Representative Thompson, would you make a presentation of the amendments that you brought?
I'll make this very brief because I know that everybody is as frustrated as I am with this issue, and it's come back over and over again. But what happened is the Phantom was busy, so I used my elves and brought forth several amendments in hopes that as we get down to the last minute, we can make some agreements and have some issues to work with rather than get mired down. And first, I'd bring your attention to the Dash 7 amendments, which are the cleanups and the definitions. There are the definitions for capital expenses, IMST, Oregon Plan, and so you can take a look at those in the spare time. That's the Dash 7 amendments. The Dash 6 amendments are changes to GWEB, which are changes to GWEB to the Oregon OWEB. It has parts in there that do with the six citizen memberships to the boards. It allows GWEB to spend funds for all purposes in Measure 66 related to salmon and watershed. And there's a few other things, but that's the basic thing. We're going to hold it to two sentences. 8 is another form of implementation of Measure 66. Establishes Parks and Natural Resources Fund, deposits 50 cents of funds to parks and sub-account and for Measure 66 and 50% for the restoration. That's yours. It implements auditing and reporting requirements for Measure 66. Please take some time to look at that one. Then I have the Dash 9. I have more amendments here. I have good L's. I want you to know. Yes. Good L's. Dash 9s were the DSL proposals for the Natural Heritage Program. It's similar to the Dash 2s. Just make some changes. And then the Dash 10s has all the changes to the Dash 2s based on Governor's Office testimony. And what it does is mixes the Dash 6 and 8 and the definition. So we have something to work with, and we can go where we need to, but after 3.5 months, I think we needed to have some alternative plans out here, and it really muddies the water now. So you've got a nice book and pick the one you want. Otherwise, the reason why I brought this forward is we were going to get down to the last week and then press our staff to death to try to make amendments, so I was trying to bring some things forward.
And actually, this allows us to press our staff to death right through the end of the legislative session. Representative Jensen, did you have a question about the proposal?
Well, just an observation, and I think Representative Starr can share this with me. We just went through a committee with a dash 75, so we've got a ways to go.
I'd like to point a clarification. I think he's impugned my integrity. He doesn't realize that I do better work than that. I have good elves.
anonymous elves. President Thompson, I would like to, on behalf of the committee, thank you for bringing the amendment. And colleagues, if others have amendments to bring forth, I think we have a framework to hang them off. Three fourths of frog amendment. Judith, did you have some housekeeping issues?
Mr. Chair, just to say that it's my understanding that next week all of our committee meetings will be focused solely on Measure 66 so that we can have a thorough discussion of all of these items. Our Thursday agenda is packed full, and so I would hope that we can get started right at 7 because we're going to, in an hour and a half, we have five bills now.
You're looking the wrong way when you say that. There we go. There we go.
Representative Leonard, from this point on, questions will cost you $5 a pop. Colleagues, thanks for your attention and consideration this evening. Appreciate it. With that, we're adjourned.